Chapter 13. History repeating itself. The dropship shuddered around Chris as he struggled to reach the cockpit. Around them, the thinning clouds warned of their rapid descent. The nose dipped sharply toward the land below them, like a monster widening its jaws. Inside the hull, gray smoke from the freshly melted hole created by the alien filled the corridors. Ezra and Collins attempted to dissipate the noxious fumes, but the air above the ruined deck was unbearable. Chris braced himself against the walls of the passage leading to the cockpit, the steep incline threatening to send him towards it out of control.
"I can't get the landing gears to lower,"
Alex shouted through the door before he entered the nest. For a moment, he could only gape at the view through the window, revealing how close they were to the ground.
"We'll have to do without it,"
Wynn returned sharply, having no patience dealing with things they could not change.
"I'll have to angle the nose just before we touch down. With any luck, I can find a stretch of land and slide this thing to a stop."
"Exactly where would that be?"
Chris asked. The ground was becoming closer and closer in the window, and most of what he could see was the gray, choppy ocean covering much of this planet. The authorities built the prison on one of the few stretches of solid land on Fiorina, and judging by their rate of descent, there would not be time to search for another. Given the alternative of not landing at all or facing the xenomorphs, Chris decided that the latter offered a better chance of survival. Eventually, the lack of communication would prompt Julia to come looking for them. Their mission was to last only a few hours, and if they were out of communication contact any longer, the chief engineer would follow procedure and come in search of them.
"The only place we can land. At the prison."
"Damn. Can you put as much distance between the facility as possible and us? We need time to set things up when those aliens come after us."
Alex shuddered openly, but Wynn remained stoic and nodded.
"I'll do what I can, but I can't make any promises. Right now, I aim to get us to the ground in one piece."
"Do what you can."
Chris patted the Vulcan on the shoulder in thanks for more than just his piloting skills. Wynn gave his captain a look, understanding the sentiment behind the gesture.
"You bet. Now go strap yourself in, Captain. This is going to be a rough landing."
Chris retreated out of the room with Wynn staring after him for a few seconds.
"He's blaming himself."
"He shouldn't,"
Alex said automatically as she aided Wynn in their rough landing, trying not to pay too much attention to the ground coming up at them.
"We all wanted to come here."
"I know, but he took the dropship because of me. I wanted to fly it out here."
"Wynn, you're not responsible for how we got here either. I've got as much to do with it as anyone. I wanted to come here just as badly to get my hands on Bishop. We all had our reasons for being here. You're not alone in feeling the way you do."
Wynn melted inside at the smile she aimed at him. He watched Alex for a second as she returned her attention to their difficult landing. Even though the situation was utterly inappropriate, Wynn could not get enough of looking at her. Just watching the determined way she handled the controls beside him and being able to smell the subtle perfume she wore stirred his emotions into a heightened state of awareness. He didn't realize he was experiencing a physical reaction until he felt tingles against his skin. For a minute, the sensation shocked Wynn, and he shrugged it away, wondering what that was all about. Instead, he turned to the screen and searched for potential landing sites, trying to remember Chris's request about keeping as far away from the prison facility as possible. Unfortunately, the list was savagely short. Wynn's hand moved across the controls at lightning speed. Being Vulcan, he benefited from the eidetic memory characteristic of his race and could quickly memorize the cockpit controls. He fed in the coordinates required and hoped his choice would be adequate.
"I'm going to set her down along the shore. I hope the stretch is long enough."
"It will have to be,"
she answered hopefully, trying to hide her fear of being anywhere near the aliens.
"You okay?"
he asked, seeing something in her eyes that forced the question from him. Alex was one of the bravest people he knew. She hid what fear she felt beneath a veneer of ruthless control, and it was rare that she let the rigid mask slip enough to allow the emotion to show.
"Wynn, I don't want to die with one of those things inside me. I'd rather kill myself first."
"I understand."
Wynn couldn't blame her. He had no wish to leave this life birthing one of those monstrosities.
"Alex, I'll never let it happen to you. I promise."
"Really?"
Wynn was no longer that shy lieutenant she rescued from Charlotte Richmond's acidic tongue. At what point had their relationship changed so much? Now, he was more than someone she once had to protect. During the nights they spent together, Wynn held her in his arms, allowing her to sleep without nightmares. Alex felt reassured, knowing he would always be there for her when she stumbled or simply needed help to chase away the ugly dreams in the dark.
"Yeah, really."
He smiled at her before returning to business as the landing began. Tapping his comm badge, he addressed everyone else in the dropship,
Buckle up, we're coming in for landing.
Wynn did not have time to learn if they obeyed him because the ground came up at them with terrifying speed, and he was soon fighting the controls against the pull of gravity. Struggling to keep the dropship's nose up, he had to level off and land the dropship on its belly since the landing gears no longer functioned. The small craft shuddered violently against velocity and gravity, with Wynn using every ounce of skill he possessed to keep them from diving into the ground nose first. The sandy stretch to be their runway swept towards them as the buckling and shuddering became increasingly violent. Seals snapped, and glass shattered on Alex's right. She raised her hands to shield herself from the flying glass, but the speed of their descent bore away most of it. Wynn continued to wrestle with the controls, and finally, the horizon sneaked into view even though everything around them was chaos as the dropship groaned from its exertion. Wynn could only imagine the state of the craft as the sand rushed up to meet them.
Brace for impact.
The nose of the dropship met the ground first, creating a tidal wave of sand and earth as it landed. It dug in and then angled slightly to let its forward momentum propel it along the sandy shore. Wynn could feel obstacles being crushed under the tremendous weight as the dropship scraped across the ground, screeching so loudly it made him wince. The prison facility lay in the distance while the gray, ugly sea flanked them on the right. If the craft did not slow down, they would run out of shore and end up in the water.
She's not slowing down.
Alex shouted over the deafening roar of grinding metal.
I know.
There was very little Wynn could do at this point. Another tremendous jolt ripped through their ears when the left wing tore away from the fuselage, leaving behind ragged and twisted metal strips exposing the superstructure. The possibility of ending up in the ocean loomed more prominently in his mind until suddenly, as if the craft was exhausted, the dropship's journey across the sand slowed. The shuddering eased, and the sea stayed distant instead of drawing closer and closer. An eternity passed with Wynn holding his breath until the dropship finally came to a rest with the edge of the shoreline only a few hundred yards away. Despite the narrow miss, Wynn considered themselves lucky.
Oh my god.
Alex let out a gasp as she unbuckled herself from her seat.
We made it.
Just barely.
Wynn muttered, slumping back into his seat.
And I think we tore her pretty good with that landing.
Wynn did not have to examine the damage to know that they would not be taking off again soon. When he peered out the side window to explore the hull a few seconds later, he pulled back grimly.
She's had it, Alex.
How bad?
Pretty bad. We've lost a wing and an engine. However we get off Fury, it won't be on this ship.
They had come down about 2 miles from the prison facility, but that distance would not prevent the aliens from coming after them. Since the species' ability to reproduce hinged on the supply of viable hosts, Chris suspected the creatures could not even afford to pass up 5 people if they were available. Chris did not know how the xenomorphs tracked their prey, but if the aliens could sense the away team, they would be coming. After their turbulent landing, a brief inspection of the dropship told Chris his crew was in a highly vulnerable position. The damage was severe, and while most of the ship remained intact, there were gaps in the hull that would make it remarkably easy for the aliens to reach them when the creatures came in force.
God, what a mess.
Alex winced at the gaping holes in the hull. They were all braving the wind and rain as it battered against their skin in abnormally large droplets, more than aware the weather would not stop the aliens from closing in on them soon enough.
How long can we hold out in this, sir?
Collins asked.
A few hours if we're lucky.
Chris muttered.
If there is one thing this trip has proved incontrovertibly, it is certainly our good standing with Lady Luck.
Ezra said dryly. Wynn flashed him a look of pure venom while Alex tensed, not about to say anything. Chris did not react to the apparent jibe, more than aware he certainly deserved some of Ezra's vitriol. He placed them in this situation no matter how he liked to think otherwise.
We need to retrieve the wing.
What for? We're never going to get this thing off the ground. She's had it, Chris.
I know that, but we'll need to seal those ruptures in the hull and fortify the ship with barricades. We only need to hold out until our check-in time, 5 hours from now. The minute we don't contact the Silico, Julia will be on her way here with the runabout.
He's right.
Alex responded in a show of support for her captain.
All we need to do is stay alive until then, possibly sooner if this storm passes.
She looked up at the sky, the rain battering her skin.
We stocked the dropship with considerable firepower before we departed from the Silico.
Ezra added.
I found what they called remote sentry units. I had at least 5 of them loaded into the cargo hold.
Remote sentry units?
Wynn glanced at the security chief.
Yes, they respond to motion, I believe. Good thinking, Ezra.
The compliment was a meager peace offering, unlikely to appease Ezra, considering how against this entire trip he had been from the beginning.
If we set them up around the perimeter of the dropship, we can keep them away for some time. I hope.
Ezra did not miss the sentiment directed at him by his captain and decided, for now, he could afford to be a little magnanimous.
You hope?
Alex frowned, wishing the news was a little brighter.
You should have seen how many were coming after us, Commander. We may not have enough artillery to keep them all away.
Collins told Alex.
It's something. If we are to survive this, we best get to work immediately. Ezra, you, Alex, and Collins set up the sentry units. Vin, you're with me. We're going to get this wing while we still can.
Sure thing,
Wynn replied, wanting to give Chris as little trouble as possible, more than aware the captain had enough guilt on his conscience as it was. They set out without saying much, and Wynn noted that Chris's gaze seemed fixed on the shale-covered beach. Wynn studied the gray horizon and the equally gray sea and thought how perfect this world was for an unspeakable species like the alien. He wondered if the creatures even had a name. Probably not. No civilized species could have survived long enough on their indigenous planet to provide one.
Chris, you okay?
Wynn asked when the torn wing of the dropship came into view. They were not very far from it, and Wynn was grateful they would not have a long hike dragging back the large piece of metal.
No, I'm not.
Chris answered shortly because Wynn was the only person he could confide in without being offered advice or judgment. Perhaps it was why they struck up such an enduring friendship. Wynn knew when to pull back and when to get in one's face. Chris never saw the Vulcan impose himself on anyone, and he was grateful for it now.
It's not your fault,
Wynn repeated Alex's earlier advice to him.
Yes, it is, Vin. No matter what I might like to tell myself, there is no hiding from the truth. We're in this mess because of me.
Chris, we all wanted to come down here.
Wynn was not about to exonerate himself because he knew how much he had contributed to this situation.
Hell, I wanted to take the stupid dropship up so bad I couldn't think straight. We would be in orbit by now if we didn't take her. The runabout would have taken straight off, and we would be on the Sulaco safe.
You didn't have to convince me very hard to take her, Vin.
Chris was grateful for what Wynn was trying to do, even though Chris knew better.
I wanted to know what happened to Ripley, a woman I had never met, who my ancestor was hell-bent on keeping alive. I wanted to know what made her so special, and the more I learned about her, the more I realized she was extraordinary.
That's not wrong, Chris.
Yes, it is. It is when I am the captain of a starship, and I have 1,000 people relying on my judgment to stay alive. Then it becomes very much my fault when I buck protocol and don't listen to Ezra when I should have. And now that ensign, that child is dead. She died to protect me, her captain, because she thought I was doing the right thing. That I was deciding to keep the crew alive, when all the while I was so wrapped up in what I wanted, I saw nothing else.
Chris, you're human,
Wynn said, wondering where this wisdom came from. Wynn supposed somewhere along the line, thanks to Alex, Chris, and the friends he made, he found his place in the world and was content with it.
After what you went through with Sarah and Adam and learning what you did, you're justified in being a little distracted.
No, I'm not.
Chris wished that excuse could exonerate him.
I hurt the people I cared about.
Chris could not bring himself to say Mary.
I could have asked for help, but I didn't. I don't know where I've been these last few weeks. I don't even know who I was.
I'll help you, Chris. You're my friend and my captain. We will get out of here and find the truth about your family.
Chris fell silent for a few seconds, but when he raised his eyes to the Vulcan, he managed a faded smile.
Thanks, Vin. I really needed to get that out.
Anytime, Parg.
When did you get so wise?
Chris chuckled as they reached the strip of wing lying half buried in the shale ground.
I don't know.
Wynn shrugged as he leaned over.
But I think it suits me.
Julia had a plan. Actually, it was not so much of a plan but rather an improvisation. However, Julia had no choice, no matter how outrageous it might seem. She knew she did not have the materials to repair the damaged window of the runabout, but if Julia had enough time, she could rewire the shield to extend a force field over the exposed area. Usually, if there was a hull breach on the Maverick, such force fields would immediately kick into operation, protecting the damaged area from decompression. Julia saw no reason the same principle could not apply to the runabout's current difficulty. Julia emerged into the hangar of the Sulaco. Her eyes scanned the immediate vicinity even though her tricorder showed the alien was not in the area. Armed with the pulse rifle, she crossed the same deck she fled a short time ago. Something was wrong down on Fiorina 361. Every instinct she possessed told her so. After finding poor Lieutenant Atwater, the alien he unwillingly birthed, and her inability to contact the away team, Julia would not blithely assume there was a reasonable explanation. Reasonable went out the window when she saw Atwater's entrails all over the floor of the runabout. The runabout hatch was still open when she reached it. Cautiously, the chief engineer peered inside the cockpit of the small craft. According to the tricorder, the xenomorph was near the Sulaco's engines, probably making itself a lovely little nest before returning for her. She did not know how much time that gave her to accomplish what she needed, but Julia was going to try anyway. Once inside the runabout, she searched the floor covered in broken glass and found the phaser she had dropped earlier. The smooth handle peered at her from beneath a compartment, and Julia quickly retrieved it before sliding it into place on her belt. Lowering herself to the floor, she crawled underneath the helm station and slid off a panel that would give her access to its inner workings. Reluctantly, she relinquished the grip of her pulse rifle and set to work, convinced she stood between the away team and oblivion. Chapter 14. Lifeboat. Time was against them, and they knew it. After Chris and Wynn salvaged what remained of the dropship's wing, the away team set to work quickly, fortifying the craft against the alien hordes undoubtedly coming for them. Ezra, Alex, and Colin set up the remote sentry units from the Sulaco. Ezra would have preferred Starfleet weapons and had grave reservations about relying on 21st century technology, but their options were limited. Once the captain and the helmsman joined them, the work detail shifted their attention to barricading all fissures and openings the aliens might use to enter the ship. This included repairing the cockpit window, which cracked during their rough landing. Using phasers, they sealed the breaches in the hull, mindful of the power usage because the weapons would be needed when the xenomorphs arrived. The storm did not relent but reached a crescendo in intensity before leveling off. The wet didn't help their repair efforts, but at least their equipment could withstand the harsh weather. Hours stretched into darkness for the days on Fury 361 were short, and with the rain continuing to descend, the blackness surrounding the ship felt like a shroud. Inside their titanium fortress, the pitter-patter of rain strummed against the hull, but no one paid any attention to its soothing sounds. They were too busy listening for anything lurking in the dark. Alex spent her time examining the damage done to the engines after the acid bath from the dying alien. The corrosive substance ate through all three decks of the drop ship and, unfortunately, reached the main engines, as the captain suspected. At least the acid took time to eat through the metal, allowing them to land before the damage became too severe. They would have been dead weight in the atmosphere if it hadn't. Alex took a moment to herself and connected Bishop to a power supply again. She hoped the android might tell them something further about the alien life form and perhaps interface with the hard drive she took from the EEV. It was a welcome distraction since there was little to do but wait for an attack or rescue, whichever came first. She hoped for the latter but was more than realistic enough to assume the former would take place first. Sparks of electricity and the spasmodic twitch of his one good hand marked Bishop's return to life. After a few seconds, the same dazed expression bled into the melted face as Bishop opened a lazy eye and took stock of his surroundings. He said nothing as the familiar environment impressed itself upon his memory banks, and it was not long before he realized where he was.
We're on the second dropship.
Yes. You know it?
I flew it.
Bishop said with a little smile, which seemed bizarre on his ruined features.
From LV-427.
Alex wondered how she would tell him what they were going through and then realized he probably would not have any feelings regarding their predicament. He was an android.
Is something the matter?
Yeah, Bishop.
Alex admitted begrudgingly.
Something is wrong. We're trapped here. An alien was on board, and after we killed it, its blood ate straight through the decks. We couldn't break atmosphere, and the ship just about tore apart during the landing. Because of the extreme ionization in the atmosphere, we can't contact our people for an immediate pickup.
I'm sorry.
He replied, and Alex believed he genuinely meant it.
Thanks.
She offered him a little smile.
We have a ship due within the next few hours if we can hold out that long.
Just look out for emergency venting.
What?
A little joke.
Bishop shrugged or made his best attempt at one.
So why did you revive me?
For something to do. Also, I need you to review the data tapes on the EEV. My tricorder suggests that someone used it after the crash.
Someone did.
Bishop explained.
Ripley wanted to know if the alien came down with us. I had to interface with the flight recorder to find out.
Can you tell me what else she might have used it for? I've already got you hardwired to the drive. All you have to do is take a peek.
I'm not what I used to be. Peeking isn't that easy for me now.
I won't let you become some museum relic, Bishop. You come from one of the most elusive periods of human history. People want to talk to you, and I want to see that you're in the state to do it. The best engineer I know is waiting to get her hands on you.
How appealing.
Amusement crept into his voice before he began searching through the data stream to find what she needed.
Alex.
Chris Larrabee entered the room.
We're warming up some rations. You should get some food.
Hello, Captain.
Bishop greeted.
Hey, Bishop.
Chris smiled, growing just as fond of the android as his science officer.
I thought you were supposed to be convalescing before we got you back to the ship.
I just wanted to find out what was in the flight recorder, Captain. Bishop can interface with it and give us a step-by-step account.
I'm doing what I can.
The android felt the need to manage their expectations.
As I said, it's dark in here.
Sometimes that's the best way to start.
Chris whispered to himself.
She accessed the medevac.
Bishop announced.
Ripley?
Chris asked, feeling a sliver of excitement, realizing he was on the cusp of learning about Ellen Ripley's last few days on Fury.
Yes.
Bishop nodded, his expression turning into a troubled frown quickly.
She is using it on herself.
Why?
Alex stared at Chris with confusion.
Surely the prison facility comes equipped with medical personnel and equipment.
Ripley's running an internal scan. She's looking for something. Something in the sternum.
No one needed to ask why.
Nothing there.
Bishop announced, to everyone's relief.
It's clear. She's moving down mid-thorax to the pelvic area.
The android's words drifted.
Bishop?
Alex asked, but Chris did not need to. Even though Bishop was a machine supposedly incapable of displaying emotion or feeling it, Chris saw the glint in his milky-colored eye and immediately knew.
Did it get her?
Yes.
Bishop's voice was full of unspoken sorrow before he added.
It's different. They're usually lodged in the sternum. This one is in the uterus.
Oh God.
Alex gasped, horrified by the notion of something so unholy in that most vulnerable place.
It's embryonic, but judging by how it looks, I think this was a queen.
Bishop squinted as if he were trying to get a better look at the thing.
It would make sense if that were the case. The queen would take longer to mature, explaining why Ripley was still in one piece days after the crash.
So all these creatures came from an alien queen that used Ripley as a host.
The horror of it was more than Alex could stomach. It almost felt as if fate was conspiring against her to ensure there was no way Ripley could escape being a victim of the xenomorphs.
I doubt it.
Chris stated, unaware of how he could be so sure, but he understood the woman enough to know she would never allow the creature inside her to endanger anyone.
I agree with the captain. Ripley would have died before letting it live. She was an exceptional human.
Chris did not speak for a few seconds as the ultimate fate of Ellen Ripley sunk in. Sorrow filled him for this woman who saw so much and deserved more than anyone for a chance at life, only to have it cruelly taken from her in the most unimaginable way possible. He mourned for her, and perhaps he mourned a little for himself as well. Chris hoped finding out the truth about Ripley would ease some of his own wounds, but all he accomplished was the deaths of good people who deserved better from him.
I think Hicks cared about her.
Bishop volunteered, seeing genuine anguish on the captain's face and hoped his words were in some small way a comfort.
They got along very well. I saw how sad she was when she told me about the others. There was a different hurt when she spoke about Hicks. Of all the Marines, Hicks was the one who most understood how frightened she was and what an act of courage it was for her to accompany them back to LV-427. After the disaster in the atmosphere processor when she rescued what remained of the squad, Hicks made it his business to keep Ripley safe.
The sudden eruption of gunfire cut Bishop from speaking further. The sound was powerfully loud, echoing throughout the dropship and reverberating against the titanium hull. Chris and Alex exchanged glances, knowing what the activation of the remote sentry units meant.
Looks like we have company.
Bishop watched them leave the room and hoped things turned out a good deal better than they did for the crew of the Sulaco.
How many?
Chris entered the passenger deck with Alex. Wynn, Collins, and Ezra stood around the computer screen, watching the progress of the remote sentry units through the digitized medium. Outside, the roar of erupting gunfire muted the sound of rain and screeching aliens as the creatures attempted to get past the deadly barrage.
Enough.
Ezra's voice was bitter as he stepped aside so the captain could see for himself. What Chris saw on that tiny screen was reason enough to justify Ezra's present snit with him. The aliens descended upon their target like a swarm of locusts. It was impossible to see where one black exoskeleton began, and another ended. All he could make out was the banana-shaped heads and the occasional glint of teeth when the gunfire illuminated the blackness surrounding the craft. Their fierce instinct to reach their potential hosts was beyond reason or belief. They were absolutely relentless and reminded Chris of the Borg, although he could not imagine which threat was worse at this moment.
Some of them are going to make it through. They've got the numbers for it.
I'm on it, sir.
Collins offered.
I'll walk the perimeter.
Susan,
Ezra glanced at her over his shoulder. I require no heroes among my junior staff. If you even see a shadow that does not look entirely right, I want you to get back to us immediately. Do we understand each other, Lieutenant? Collins knew the chief's tone well enough to understand how serious he was about that order. The chief took his team's safety seriously. He did not tolerate the idea that security officers died young, and this devotion to them earned the chief their loyalty.
Yes, sir.
She nodded and left the room. The aliens were still coming, and the counter for the rounds left in all the guns clicked down rapidly. Although Ezra brought enough ammunition to last them for several assaults, the ability to reload became problematic when the aliens offered the guns no respite. Shrill screeches tore through the air almost as rapidly as the bullets being fired, and Chris had to admit for weapons forged so long ago, the sentry units were certainly holding up against the test of time.
They're still coming.
They won't stop.
Wynn spoke with something that sounded a great deal like familiarity.
We're what they need to continue. Nothing else defines their existence more than that.
Alex threw an uncertain glance at him.
Since when were you a behavioral expert?
I just know it.
Wynn could not explain why, but he had this sixth sense about the creatures to be convinced he was right. No one knew how to respond to Wynn's statement, and a few seconds of awkward silence followed. Chris guessed it had to do with the Vulcan's close contact with the alien. His natural telepathy gave him an insight into the creature's psyche, such as it was. Then, without warning, the guns stopped firing. For a terrible moment, Chris thought their ammunition was exhausted, but the counter read on the sentry unit's controller told them otherwise.
They're going!
Alex exclaimed, never more relieved than at that moment. Ezra was nowhere that optimistic.
For now. They will return later, I am certain of it.
He's right.
Chris couldn't disagree.
Let's wait a few minutes and go reload those guns again. I like to have some insurance before later rolls by.
Collins patrolled the belly of the dropship, poised for trouble when she heard the sound. Although they fortified the large rips in the hull, the aliens were strong. The Bishop android said they were more than capable of tearing through steel, as evidenced by the destruction of the barricades erected by the colonists of LV-427. She remembered the chief's orders if she heard anything strange. Although it was sound advice, Collins found she could not withdraw. She trapped them all here because she opened fire on the alien attempting to attack the captain. Logically, Collins knew she did the right thing, but accepting it as the right thing was hard when they were in such perilous circumstances. She raised her phaser to fire, prepared to kill anything coming into her sights because no other alien was going to have the run of the ship if she could help it. It occurred to Collins that perhaps there were better actions than using her phaser. She was carrying one of the pulse rifles and suspected it would cause less damage. Of course, the alien would still bleed, but it would not create the explosion of acid that crippled the dropship. Something hard skittering across a metal surface cut short her ruminations. Collins swung around to see the dark shadows moving in the corner. She opened fire, driving the alien out of its hiding place with an ear-piercing screech. It sprinted towards her, and Collins kept pace with it to maintain her aim. She was about to fire again when she realized its proximity to the barricade sealing the outer hull. Pull the trigger, and the acid would eat away their hopes of staying alive. There was only one thing to do. The alien hissed at her, sensing her hesitation but not why. Collins took a deep breath and supposed she might take the creature, at least dislodge it far enough away from the barricade. The dropship was resting on its belly, pressed against the beach. If she shot it while it was there, the acid would dissolve into the ground harmlessly. Steeling herself, she ran forward, positioning her body as if she were a gridiron player of old, her shoulder ahead of the rest of her. The alien was more than equal to the attack. Collins slammed into its side hard enough to shove it away from the barricade, about to pull away before it tore her to pieces when she realized the trap it set for her. A second alien watched in the darkness, and the minute the xenomorphs caught her between them, they attacked. As Collins felt teeth sink into her body, she did the last thing she could to keep more of these monsters from penetrating the ship. Pulling the trigger several times, Collins screamed in pain and was beyond feeling anything by the time the acid bath descended. The tricorder started beeping. Julia sat up abruptly, almost cracking her skull on the underside of the panel. Picking up the tricorder, she studied the display and tensed. The alien was approaching her location fast. Julia grabbed the pulse rifle because, for some stupid reason, the weapon felt a lot more reassuring than her phaser. She was being ridiculous, of course. Her phaser was far more efficient than anything built in the 21st century. Leaving the runabout quickly, Julia had no intention of confronting the alien anywhere near the craft. Not when it was the only means of escaping the Sulaco, but also reaching the away team. Nothing appeared out of the ordinary when she emerged. Fear made Julia's breath come hard and fast. There were too many shapes on this large deck, and now more than ever, Julia saw how alone she was on this enormous ship. She shuddered inwardly, aching for Ezra while praying for his safety. The tricorder gave her an idea of the alien's proximity but not which direction it would come at her. According to the tricorder, it was within 50 feet of her location. Julia moved to the center of the hangar deck, reducing the alien's ability to take her by surprise. No matter what direction it came from, Julia would see its approach. She wanted enough space between them to vaporize the thing before it reached her with its lightning-fast reflexes. The proximity alert continued to beep, growing faster and faster. 50 meters became 40 before dwindling to a scant 30 feet. That couldn't be right, Julia thought. She ought to see the creature at that distance, but there was no sign of it. Shifting her gaze to the grates across the floor, Julia wondered if it suspected a trap and was trying to reach her that way. Just to be safe, she made sure she was nowhere near the detachable grills and reconfigured her safety zone, taking that route into account. She glanced at her tricorder again and expected to see the alien closing, except it did not. 30 feet, and the creature held position. Did it know the virtue of patience? As the time lengthened, Julia got nervous. Did it know how to wait out its prey? Holding firm and creating such a strangulating atmosphere of fear, it tricked its helpless victim into doing something foolish. Julia couldn't be sure, but it felt like such a ruse was being played on her now. Beads of sweat ran down her forehead and along her back. Her focus wavered as her eyes darted from one place to another, hoping to catch out the alien playing havoc with her nerves rather superbly.
"Come on out, you bastard!"
Her voice echoed throughout the hangar until it reached the obstruction of the wall and bounced back upon itself. Still no response. Perhaps her tricorder was malfunctioning. Julia slipped her phaser back onto her belt to inspect the device when something overhead caught her eye. The alien dropped so quickly that Julia barely had time to move out of the way before it landed on top of the petite redhead. Julia let out a scream as it came at her. The xenomorph was barely 3 feet away when Julia raised the rifle. She had barely a second to register that pulling the trigger would kill the alien, but she would almost certainly die herself. The savage creature, with its fearsome teeth and powerful claws, would take her with it when it sprayed her with acid. Secondary jaws snapped out of its mouth, threatening to puncture her cranium. Julia blocked its snapping teeth with the rifle, allowing it to crunch down on steel instead. It screeched indignantly at the deception and swiped at her with powerful talons. Julia uttered a pained scream as she felt the skin across her chest tear and reacted the only way a terrified woman could, with primal instinct. This time, when it leaped at her, Julia dove for the floor at the last minute, letting it sail overhead and missing her completely. With a reaction time that would have made Ezra proud, Julia rolled onto her knees, raising the pulse rifle to fire when the alien scrambled after her again. The xenomorph's exoskeleton clacked against the steel as it closed in, the ferocity of its approach telling Julia it may have abandoned any thought of using her as a host. It didn't matter. Adrenaline surged through her veins, carried by currents of fury and terror. Uttering another piercing screech, the alien lunged at her, its coiled tail propelling it through the air. Bullets exploded out of the rifle's short barrel with such force that Julia stumbled backward from the recoil. Multiple rounds slammed into the alien, halting its advance. Before acid blood could splatter over her, Julia retreated several feet, her finger still pressed on the trigger. Gunfire eclipsed the alien's death shriek, tearing its skeletal body apart. The acid began eating the floor plates as soon as the noxious substance touched the deck. For a long while, Julia stared at the dead xenomorph, dazed. She still aimed the pulse rifle at the carcass as if, in death, it might still do harm. She kept her eyes on the creature until the acid ate away the floor beneath it, and the xenomorph sank into the newly created hole to disappear out of sight. Only after it was gone did she dare lower her gun. Julia was trembling when she stood up shakily to her feet and walked to the disintegrated section of the hangar floor. Peering through the hole, the acid had eaten its way through the deck below and the one beneath it. The alien's corrosive blood worked well, and she wondered how far it would reach before it oxidized and became inert. Questions for Alex, Julia thought as she sank to the floor and caught her breath.
I hope you learned a lesson.
She stared at the space where the alien had been.
Never mess with an engineer.
Chapter 15. Confrontation.
That stings,
Wynn complained when Alex treated the wounds he received battling the alien earlier. The dermal regenerator repaired the broken skin, but there were still too many contaminants in Fury's atmosphere to prevent him from catching infections if she did not inoculate him. Wynn barely registered his wounds. His body surged with adrenaline, removing any discomfort from the injury. It was only her presence that affected him. Wynn relished her scent as her fingers touched his bare skin, filling him with a warmth he had never known before. Every innocent touch felt tantalizing, and the pads of her fingers running across his flesh made him want to. He wasn't sure what. He only knew he liked it.
Stop complaining.
She cleaned the smears of green blood from around the freshly repaired skin.
You may be stronger than a human, but you're not indestructible.
I hadn't guessed.
He shrugged, dismissing her worry.
It isn't that bad.
In this environment, with huge bugs running around the place spraying acid everywhere, wanting to make us hosts for more of them, not to mention the tiny parasitic suckers that seem to thrive in this climate, you need these doses to keep out of trouble.
She said firmly and went back to what she was doing.
As opposed to what?
Wynn was more interested in how her fingers were moving against him, how her body seemed more fluid and graceful than ever, and how every breath aroused his senses. His blood felt like it was boiling in his veins, and the sensation was good, even if he did not understand it.
Good point. Just humor me, okay?
The captain and Ezra had gone outside the ship, taking advantage of the momentary pause and hostilities to reload the remote sentry units before the xenomorphs made their second attempt to breach their defenses. No one had any illusions it would be long, and Alex wanted to put the brief time afforded by the lull to good use.
All right.
Wynn hated the fuss but enjoyed everything else she was doing. The unmistakable sound of gunfire shattered the stillness of the quiet in the small room. Their eyes locked for an instant at the realization the shots were close, too close to be produced by either the captain or Ezra outside. Whoever pulled the trigger to their weapon had done it inside the dropship barricades. Wynn jumped to his feet, grabbing his own gun as Alex tapped her comm badge. The science officer was behind him, unwilling to let Wynn go anywhere on the ship alone.
Captain, did you hear that?
She asked, following Wynn down the narrow corridor.
Yes, we did. Ezra and I are on our way.
Alex disconnected the link and tried Collins, deducing now she was the only one among them who could have discharged a weapon.
Collins!
There was no response.
Come on, soon!
Alex tried again, hoping desperation alone would produce the result she wanted. The seconds stretched past as she and Wynn descended into the lower depths of the dropship, hearing nothing from the lieutenant. Although Alex had some idea what they would find at the source of the gunfire, she continued to hope Collins was not gone, like Christy and Angel. Noxious acid fumes greeted them as soon as they reached the lower deck, followed by the familiar smell of molten steel. It told Alex precisely what they would find before they entered the hold. Wynn slipped through the door first, walking into the smoke, which he brushed aside so he could see. The tricorder showed no creatures present in the dropship. She wished she had been as diligent when the aliens attempted to breach the remote sentries earlier. It should have occurred to her some creatures might have succeeded in penetrating the ship. Not only did the tricorder register the lack of aliens, but Collins was also absent. It took only a second for Wynn to confirm why.
Alex, it's too late.
Damn it! I should have been paying attention during the attack.
Don't start blaming yourself.
He stepped away from the bloody remains of Lieutenant Collins, who died fighting, and ensured she took the aliens with her. The carcasses of the dead creatures were eating their way through the deck. The parts of Collins, not doused with acid, were covered in blood. Wynn doubted there was enough of her left to bury once the acid was done with its grisly work. Alex forced herself to look just long enough to conclude she probably shouldn't have. She turned away in time to see the captain and Ezra entering the hold. Both men paused at her expression.
It's too late, Captain.
Chris closed his eyes, the burden of another life lost descending on him. Another needless death because of his ignorance of good sense by bringing them to this world where the possibility of danger existed. His voice died in his throat, and he remained rooted to the spot, unable to think because the guilt lashed at him like the gale force winds outside the hull. Ezra continued to where Lieutenant Collins had died, doing her duty.
It looks like two of them got in during the shooting.
Wynn stepped away, having seen enough to last him several lifetimes.
I figured Collins walked in here and spotted them. She knew if she used a phaser, she'd most likely spill enough acid blood to compromise the hull. Judging from where she had them pinned, I think she somehow lured them to solid ground so the acid would seep into the soil, not eat through the wall.
Why didn't she call for help?
Chris whispered angrily.
Chances are she didn't have time. You've seen how fast these things move.
Chris couldn't argue with that. The aliens moved at lightning speed. Their ability to adapt to any terrain was without a doubt, and Collins would have known how dangerous it was to have two such creatures roaming loose inside the dropship. Even for a craft this small and with their tricorders, there were ample places for the aliens to hide, making them extremely hard to neutralize.
Are there any more of them?
Chris asked Alex since she was carrying the tricorder.
No. The ship is clear.
All right. We best get ready for the next wave.
There was nothing else they could do. There would be a proper memorial to their fallen comrade when they were out of this. For now, they had work to do. Chris gestured to his remaining crew to follow him as he started out of the cargo hold. Alex and Wynn immediately fell into stride side by side while trailing behind their captain until they noticed Ezra had not moved a step. Ezra stayed hunched over Collins' remains, staring into the blood and dissolving remnants of an officer and a friend he had worked with closely since arriving on the Maverick. She always had a reputation for being trouble, and Chris had more than raised a brow when Ezra asked for her transfer to the Maverick. Still, they had labeled him an outcast once, so Ezra could never take a bad report about any officer at face value.
Ezra?
Wynn called out. Ezra did not answer, and his silence made the others stop. Ezra was so angry he could not speak. Only when Silas Poplar killed Julia in that holodeck fantasy world created by Q had Ezra felt anger equal to this. However, his rage this time was not at some faceless killer he had yet to discover, but a source closer to home. His fury at the captain's irresponsibility bubbled to the surface for the first time since this began, and Ezra refused to suppress it. He rose to his feet slowly, glaring at Chris, the venom exuding from him in clear waves of rage.
I hold you completely responsible for this.
Ezra, this is not the time.
Alex recognized the look in his eyes and knew they were about to have a situation.
When is it time?
Ezra whirled at her, too carried away by his anger to stop. He tried so hard to do his job. Time and time again, he asked the captain to walk on the side of prudence, but the captain, so obsessed with finding answers to a riddle in the past, ignored him, although everything about the situation demanded caution.
When we are all dead? Well, that dear Alexandra is not too far away now, is it?
Ezra, that's enough,
Wynn warned, even though he understood Ezra's anger. However, nothing the chief said could make the captain feel any worse than he already did.
It is not enough.
Ezra rarely allowed his rage to have free rein, but now unleashed, it was determined to have its day.
My people are dead. They did not have to die. If you had just listened to me, if you had just acknowledged one single concern I had, they would still be here. In fact, not only would they be alive, we would be on our way out of here instead of waiting for those hellish creatures to close in on us.
Ezra!
Alex barked at him, the full weight of her Starfleet authority behind her.
You are riding close to insubordination. Now give it a rest.
The hell I will.
He took a step towards Chris, and Wynn immediately blocked his path, ensuring he did not reach the captain.
Ezra, I did what I had to.
Chris finally defended himself.
I'm sorry about Angel, Christy, and Collins. I'll never be able to forgive myself for what happened to them. And you're right, not just about this, but about everything.
And you think that makes a difference, don't you?
Ezra shook his head in disgust.
You think an apology forgives everything you did? Forgive me, sir, but I am afraid that is not good enough. What happens the next time we go on a mission that conflicts with your personal troubles?
Don't push your luck, Ezra.
Chris broke past Wynn and now stood toe to toe with the security chief. He was more than aware of his complicity in the deaths of those crewmen, but Ezra was crossing a line he would not tolerate from anyone, even a friend.
Or what, Captain? Are you going to charge me with insubordination?
Chris was going to do more than that. He was going to wipe that insubordinate smirk off Ezra's face.
You do that, Captain, and I will charge you with misconduct.
He lunged at Chris, prepared to strike, with Chris doing the same. Before either could make contact, Wynn intervened, pulling both men apart before flinging them to either side of the room. He had enough strength to manage the feat easily, and the security chief and captain went sprawling in opposite directions.
Knock it off. We are in no shape for either of you to get into a pissing contest about who's to blame.
This display from both his friends enraged Wynn. While Chris deserved some things said to him, just as Ezra was justified in expressing them, there was a line crossed he did not care from either of them.
Now, we need to work together to get out of this mess alive. What you two decide to do once we get off this hellhole is up to you, but we're all standing waist deep in the same shit. Those things are coming back for us as soon as they discover there are more of them than there are bullets in the remote sentry units, so we better think of a plan. Captain, we need you to come up with one.
He shifted his gaze from Chris to Ezra.
And Ezra, we need you to make it work.
Ezra blinked and looked away, feeling inordinate shame for letting his anger get the best of him. A short time ago, he was thinking of how he asked for Collins to be assigned to the Maverick because he knew what it was like to be undervalued because of what it said in one's official record. Yet, Ezra remembered he was on the Maverick because Chris took the same chance on him. In light of Wynn's harsh but justifiable words, Ezra realized he had behaved abominably, and Wynn was correct. Nothing he said to Chris could make the captain feel any worse already. Besides, Collins, Christy, and Angel were a part of Chris's crew, not just his security team.
Captain,
Ezra swallowed hard, feeling flushes of shame as he kept his eyes fixed on the floor, unable to meet Chris's stare.
I am sorry for what I said. I had no right to speak to you in that fashion, and I know you did not mean for any of this to happen.
The apology meant a great deal to Chris because he knew precisely what Ezra was feeling. He was responsible for their deaths. Ezra had pointed out the potential for something to go wrong from the beginning, and Chris ignored him.
Thank you, Ezra.
He accepted the apology.
I promise I'll never take your advice for granted again, and we will get out of here. I won't let any more of us die in this place.
Captain.
Alex interrupted the speech while her eyes remained fixed on the tricorder. Her expression was deathly, and they knew even before she spoke Alex was about to deliver bad news.
The aliens. They are attacking.
This time, the converging aliens did not follow their earlier pattern of attack. Instead of blindly attacking sentry units and being cut to pieces, there was now a strategy in their advance. Some were sacrificed so others could slip past their defensive perimeter. The Starfleet officers watched through the console screen at the unfolding carnage, their blood chilling with each shrill screech. Even though none of the aliens had yet to reach the hull, it was only a matter of time. There was little Chris could think to stop them from taking the ship. Inside the small compartment where they watched the alien advance, the deafening noise made it almost impossible for them to talk. All they could do was watch the scene outside, diminishing their hope. Alex could see the writing on the wall, just like her captain. Soon, they would be in a position with very little chance of survival, no matter their course. It stood to reason that the aliens would make their way to the hull, and the creatures would rip the titanium barricades apart when that happened. Once the aliens were inside the dropship, they'd have to leave, except there was nowhere to go. The prison may have been a maximum security installation, but it couldn't keep out a life form as adaptable and ferocious as this one. Alex did not like their chances out in the open but supposed it was better than nothing. Suddenly, Alex remembered she'd left Bishop conscious. There could be no crueler act than to leave him aware, without the ability to save himself, waiting for deliverance that would never come if anything happened to them. For someone who had been in a similar situation a lifetime ago, Alex was not about to let it happen to Bishop. Without considering the wisdom of her actions, the science officer broke away from the others and hurried to the passenger deck, where she left the android. She was halfway there when suddenly a burst of static penetrated the noise outside, making her flinch. Alex scanned the area, searching for the noise, thinking it must have been one of those old-fashioned 21st century radios. Straining to listen to pinpoint the source, the scratchy burst repeated, and Alex realized it was coming from her comm badge.
Lieutenant Pemberton to the away team. Come in.
Julia's voice reached across space and flooded Alex with nothing less than joy.
Julia.
Alex tapped her comm badge and wondered if the captain and the others could hear it. They could barely hear each other over the roar of sentry units firing, let alone this distorted voice from space.
Where the hell have you been? Do you have any idea what we've been going through?
What you've been going through?
The redhead snorted from the cockpit of the runabout.
Don't get me started.
How did you contact us through the storm?
I'm piggybacking the signal on a tachyon pulse. It's drawing your transmission to it through the interference.
Although unsurprised by Julia's ingenuity, Alex decided the explanations could wait.
Julia, get down here. The place is crawling with aliens. We've already lost all our security personnel.
All.
Her voice tightened with sheer terror.
Ezra.
Alex scolded herself and immediately clarified.
Ezra's fine, but we've barricaded ourselves on the dropship. We can't take off, and we're about to be overwhelmed by these things. Keep that runabout into maximum burn and get us the hell out of here.
I'm already on my way. Just hang on.
Alex.
Chris's voice sliced through Julia's communication.
Where the hell are you? We've got breaches through the perimeter. They've gotten through the hull. We've got to evacuate immediately.
Alex swung around and prepared to return the way she came when something dropped in front of her. All black and slithery, it landed softly on the deck and straightened itself upright, towering over her. The sight of the xenomorph froze Alex to the spot as she watched it hiss with its massive jaws, powerful talons, and spiky tail coiling languidly as it prepared to attack. The lapse lasted a second before Alex reached for her phaser and fired. The beam of energy caught it straight in the gut and threw it halfway across the corridor before its body exploded, spraying acid in all directions. Alex backed up, preparing to find another way to the captain, when she heard something behind her. Something very close. She spun into a set of glistening jaws inches from her face. When guest Alex might have gone back to get the android Bishop, what remained of the away team left the command center once the damn things began overrunning the ship. All they could do was find their missing member and get out while they could. It was anyone's guess what would happen once they were out in the open, but at the moment, the confined spaces gave the aliens too much advantage. The fumes left behind by the acid blood meant taking a detour to reach the passenger compartment.
Bishop,
Wynn spoke as he lowered himself into the room after they found an alternate route.
Where's Alex?
Bishop could not meet the Vulcan's gaze as Chris and Ezra followed him down.
I heard her coming. She was speaking to someone, but she never got here.
Speaking to someone?
Wynn mused and exchanged puzzled glances with both Ezra and Chris.
Someone called Julia.
Julia? Did you say, Julia?
How did she get through the storm?
Chris asked but decided it did not matter. He tapped his comm badge as Wynn ran out of the room, trying to retrace Alex's steps, with Ezra shadowing him.
Away team to Lieutenant Pemberton. Come in.
Chris hoped to repeat the same fluke that allowed Alex to communicate with Julia.
This is Captain Larrabee. Come in, Julia.
I heard her, and then I heard it.
Chris's heart froze in his chest when he grasped what Bishop was trying to say until Julia's voice belayed his horror with hope.
Captain, thank God you're all right. I was talking to Alex, but we got cut off. Stand by for pickup. I've got the dropship in sight now.
No sooner than she uttered those words, the ground shuddered with a violent rumble. Bishop rattled on his table as the tremor shook objects free of their places to crash on the floor.
I was not aware of Fiorina experiencing seismic instability.
It's not seismic instability. Those are phaser blasts.
Just clearing the area. You seem to be surrounded by the things.
The signal was much stronger now. Chris was about to answer when Wynn and Ezra returned. Wynn was carrying a phaser, wearing an expression of pure despair. Wynn's cobalt-colored eyes appeared as black as the alien's soul. It was as if someone had stuck a knife through his heart, and Chris knew of only one thing capable of devastating the helmsman so much.
Alex?
Chris was almost afraid to ask.
There was no sign of her.
Ezra spoke because Wynn could not. Chris could see the Vulcan's hand clenched so tightly around the science officer's phaser the metal was bending.
All we found is her phaser.
Vin, I'm sorry.
Chris whispered, but words were not enough. If it was Mary taken because of someone else's irresponsibility, Chris would tear them apart.
There was no body.
Bishop interrupted. Both Ezra and Wynn looked up.
No, no body.
She's still alive. They don't kill you. They only do that if you give them no other choice. Chances are she's being cocooned for implantation.
No, I promised her I wouldn't let that happen.
Wynn shot a look at Chris and defied the captain to say otherwise because, friend or not, he would regret it.
If she's alive, I'm going to get her. I won't let her die like that.
Steady there, Vin. We are not letting her die, are we, Captain?
The security officer met his captain's eyes and told Chris he was more than willing to walk into that hive at Wynn's side to get Alex back.
No, we're not.
Chris agreed completely.
Julia, we're coming topside. Be ready to pick us up.
With that, he severed the connection and gave Wynn and Ezra one of those infamous Larrabee stares.
We're leaving. All of us.